Chapter 4, Second Expedition Against Marshal Blucher, Battles of Chambopère, Montmirail, Chateau Thierry, and Vauchamp. From the 9th to the 15th of February, Blucher's march through Champagne had filled the capital with alarm. Most unfavorable intelligence was hourly arriving from Paris. Blucher had entered the Brie Champenois and was advancing by forced marches. The Duc de Tarento had retired upon Ferté-sous-Jouarre, and the fugitives were entering Meaux. This bold incursion of the enemy roused Napoleon. He resolved at least to make the Prussians pay dearly for their temerity, and he formed the design of unexpectedly falling on their flank. Napoleon was poring over his maps with the compasses in his hand when the Duc de Bassano presented himself with the dispatches which he had prepared for Châtillon. "Oh, here you are," said Napoleon, as the Duke entered the apartment. "But I'm now thinking of something very different. I'm beating Blucher on the map. He is advancing by the road of Montmirail. I shall set out and beat him tomorrow. I shall beat him again the day after tomorrow. Should this movement prove as successful as I expect it will, the state of affairs will be entirely changed, and we shall then see what will be done." There was no post road by which communications could be maintained between the high road of Troyes, which was occupied by the French army, and the road to Chalon, along which Blucher's troops were so boldly advancing. The vast plains of the Brie Champenoise separated these two avenues of the capital, and from Nogent to Montmirail, by the way of Cezanne, which was a distance of no less than 12 leagues, was regarded by the country people as a very difficult journey at that season of the year. But such an obstacle was not sufficient to thwart Napoleon's design. He left General Bermond at Nogent under the orders of the Duc de Belluno, and he stationed the Duke of Reggio at Bray-sur-Seine, instructing them to hold the Austrians in check as long as possible to prevent them effecting the passage of the Seine and immediately concealing his movement behind the curtain formed by our rear guard. He commenced his second expedition against the Prussian army. On the evening of the 8th, the Imperial Guard made a march towards Villeneuve, and on the 9th, Napoleon departed for Nogent, intending with the main body of his force to pass the night at Cezanne. That evening, our couriers met some Prussian cavalry on the banks of the river of Petite Marne between Cezanne and Chambopère. According to the accounts given by the inhabitants, the Duc de Tarento was retiring on Meaux, and Prussians were covering the roads from Chalon to La Ferté, and even beyond the latter place, and they were marching in perfect confidence. We had now arrived within 4 leagues of them, but the saber blows which had been given at the advanced posts might have warned the enemy of our approach. The depth of the valley of the Petite Marne, the marsh of Saint-Gaume, and the woods and defiles of the road presented many obstacles to the march of our troops and prevented them from bringing up their artillery. The rapidity and boldness of our movement had averted every chance that might have proved unfavorable to us. We found before us only a small body of troops who were far from maintaining due vigilance, and who had mistaken the clashing of our sabers on the preceding day for a skirmish with a party of marauders. Meanwhile, the Duc de Ragusa, who commanded the advance guard, found the road so extremely bad that he turned back. Napoleon, however, compelled him immediately to resume his advance. Horses were put under requisition on all sides, double the usual number were yoked, and everything now proceeded according to Napoleon's wishes. On the morning of the 10th, the Duke of Ragusa, under the eye of Napoleon, passed the defiles of St. Cloud and drove the enemy from the village of Bay. In the afternoon, our army arrived at the village of Chambopère, debouched on the high road of Chalon, and there completely beat the columns, which General Ausufieff, the same who defended Brienne, had rallied against us when too late. The rout was so decisive that the enemy's forces separated. Some fled in the direction of Montmorency and were pursued by the cavalry of General Nansouty. Others retreated on Etoges and Chalon and were pursued by the Duc de Ragusa. Napoleon, now master Chambaupert, took up his abode in a cottage on the road at the corner of the principal street of the village. Here the enemy's generals, who had been made prisoners, were introduced to him, and he made them dine with him. Until this last defeat, we had been uniformly unsuccessful throughout the whole campaign. With what joy, then, did we hail this first ray of good fortune? Napoleon was inspired with new hopes. The Prussian army, thus a second time intercepted in its march, was now separated into two masses, over both of which Napoleon relied on obtaining signal advantage. He already began to fear that the Duc de Vicenza, acting upon the powers which had been transmitted to him from Troyes, might be too hasty in signing the treaty. He wrote to acquaint him that a brilliant change had occurred in our affairs, that new advantages were likely to ensue, and that the French plenipotentiary might now assume a less humble attitude at the Congress. Marshal Blücher in person had not yet got beyond Chambaupert. He was with his rear guard at Vertou, between us and Chalon. The Duke de Ragusa was left to keep him in check while Napoleon advanced in pursuit of Generals York and Sacken, who were between us and the capital. The troops of Blücher and Schwarzenberg were mutually striving to outstrip each other in their march to Paris. To be the first to enter the capital was the grand object of their endeavors. The Prussians contrived to keep themselves in the advance. General York was already within sight of the spires of Meaux, and the Russian general, Sacken, who supported him, was at La Ferté. Two more marches, and they would bivouac at the foot of Montmartre. But the Prussians suddenly halted. They had received a summons from the Russians, who were in their rear, and to whom the intelligence of the Battle of Chambaupert had been communicated with the rapidity of lightning. The columns now hastily fell back upon each other for the purpose of opening a passage to their general-in-chief. Our army, which was advancing to meet them, came up with them on the morning of the 11th. Our advanced guard, which issued from Montmorency by the Paris road, stopped the Russians and Prussians, and a sanguinary engagement immediately ensued. At 3 p.m, the Duke de Treviso, who had remained behind with the old guard, rejoined the army by the direct road from Sezanne to Montmorency. Napoleon then gave orders for a general and decisive attack. On the right of the road, looking towards Paris, Marshal Ney and the Duke of Treviso placed themselves at the head of the guard and carried the Ferme de Grenoble, round which the enemy had strongly established himself. On the left, General Bertrand and the Duke de Dantzig were about to conclude the engagement, which General Ricard had maintained since the commencement of the battle in the village of Marche. The Russians and Prussians then renounced their design of forcing a passage by Montmorency. They retired across the fields to Chateau Thierry in the hope of regaining a communication with Blücher by the second road to Chalon, which runs along the banks of the Marne.